radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome to the Leader's Toolbox on thefirehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Gasway, and I am in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, and I have a wonderful opportunity to sit down and talk to John Salka. John is a 30-year veteran of the Fire Department of the City of New York, where he works as a battalion chief. And John is the author of the company or of the book, First In, Last Out. And we're going to talk today about company officer development. Welcome, John.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for joining me. I know you're a busy person, so I really appreciate the gift of your time. John, you travel the country, maybe the globe, talking with fire officers and chief officers about leadership and leadership development, and particularly maybe this topic of passion of developing company officers. What are some of the elements that are missing in developing company officers?
Well, what I've seen, and I've seen it locally in some of the fire departments that I've, you know, been a member of and interacted with, and I've seen it in my travels across the country when I'm training, one of the big issues, one of the big segments, components that's missing in officer development, particularly company officer development, is training, is preparation. Lots of fire departments, and being a member of a volunteer fire department for over 30 years, and I still am, in a local little community that I live in, and being a member of the New York Fire Department and another previous career department, I've seen sort of all different sides of the story. And volunteer departments, lots of people, you know, choose officers by elections. I think I wrote an article a few months back for Firehouse about, you know, who's the boss and all the different ways that people select officers. In larger departments, it might be an election. It might be rather a civil service exam. You might have to study some technical material. But the fact of the matter comes down to whether you're in a volunteer fire department and you win an election, or whether you're in a career department and you take a test, somewhere along the line, a firefighter turns into an officer. And there are many fire departments across the country that simply give the guy a different color shirt and a new set of collar brass and tell him, you're a lieutenant, you're a captain. Go down the block, they send him to a different company, and all of a sudden he's expected to perform as a company officer with little or no official training. So that's a major problem right there. And lots of places I go to, I ask that question, leadership program or a company officer training program, raise your hand if you've gone to any official training after getting promoted or before getting promoted. And in an audience of 100, I might get 5 or 10 hands up, and the rest of them, nothing. No input from the fire department, no leadership skills, no tactics, no discipline. All those subject areas that you're going to definitely be dealing with as a company officer, you're sort of on your own.
So, is it fair to say that in some of the classes you're teaching that you're some of your audience are people who are trying to play catch up? You know, they got promoted, and now they're feeling like I got to get this training, so they're coming and trying to pick it up.
Absolutely.
After the fact.
Absolutely. Now, some places, to their credit, some fire departments who don't have, you know, established official training programs, some fire departments will call me in and to run a company officer training program. And it won't be just for their officers, but they'll bring in all their officers, and they'll bring in all their aspiring officers and folks like that that they know are getting prepared to take an exam or something. So that's good. That's a credit to them. Lots of places I'll go, it'll be a union local will bring me in, or a firefighters association or a chief's association, to do the same thing, to try and, you know, increase the skills and abilities of the newest crop of officers that are getting promoted or getting selected to run a fire department. And as I've said a lot of times to colleagues of mine in the fire department and friends of mine that I travel around the country teaching with, is some of the biggest problems in the fire service today exist because the folks that end up at the top ends of the fire department, or even the middle management people, they're amateurs. And I don't mean that in a negative way at all. I just mean that they've really never had any official training or preparation for the jobs and the duties that they end up doing. And by not giving people preparation or training or development into the company officer's rank, which is the first step after firefighter, they just sort of set that course off, you know, off to the left or off to the right, right from the beginning, and never gets corrected.
John, some organizations, I think, expect their company officers, or maybe back when they're firefighters and they're going to become company officers, to learn how to be a company officer from the company officer they already have. Now, what about when that company officer isn't really that good,
right,
and they're now the mentor of their, they have a, you know, they're a protege who's not got a good role model. Right,
of an unskilled guy.
Yeah, do you see some of that?
Well, actually, it's not all bad news. The bad news is that somebody has to do that, that somebody doesn't get any training, they don't get any preparation, and they have to rely on being a firefighter for 5 or 6 or 7 years and learning by watching and listening and seeing how their officer treats people and how he acts at fires and how he disciplines his charges. And if they have a good officer, which, you know, in my experience and most of us, most of the folks that are listening today, most officers are very good. Trained or not trained, most officers get a pretty good knack at doing things. So if you have a good officer who's got some good skills, you're probably going to develop and assimilate and some of those yourself. If you don't have such a good officer, or if you got a guy that's maybe a total buffoon, really doesn't belong to be there at all, and unfortunately, the fact is a couple of those do still exist in the fire service. It only brings me a great story from my buddy Rick Lasky when he was, I believe, an assistant or a deputy chief. He wasn't the chief, but he was in the chief's ranks outside of Chicago when he landed a job as the chief of the Coeur d'Alene Fire Department. And they were having a little get together for him, and he was getting ready to leave. And he turned to one of his buddies, who was a good longtime buddy of his, who was the chief of a neighboring department, and said, "Hey, you got to give me a chestnut. Give me a good piece of information. I'm going to be the chief now. I'm going to have the big chair. What do I do, you know?" He said, "I'll give you some good advice. You see that guy over there?" And he was pointing to Rick's boss, the guy who was Rick's boss at the time, the chief. He said, "You see him?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "Anytime you got to make a decision, do the opposite," or whatever that guy would do. and you laugh, but it's true. And Rick said it was the best advice he ever got because the guy was a bit of a loser, and nobody really respected him or liked the way he did stuff. And so the lesson there is you can learn how to do things well, even from a poor boss, maybe by just figuring out, gee, that's not a very good way to do it. And I think we've all probably been present in a fire apparatus floor or in a kitchen of a firehouse or maybe up in a bunk room somewhere where a lieutenant was taking a piece out of a fireman, maybe improperly or maybe rudely or maybe unprofessionally, and you say to yourself, God, I'll never do that. So sometimes you can learn some good lessons even from some people who maybe aren't doing it right.
Okay. Where else could a company officer want to be turn to find good role models? In other words, where else out there could they learn about leadership? Do you have any good reads? I know your book is obviously, one that is good for them. Who have you read along the way that you'd say, that person's got it going on. They got some good advice.
You know what? The fire service, I wrote my book back in 2004. It's still selling. I don't know what numbers it's still selling, but there's still enough interest out there in leadership in general that people are still buying my book. And you know what? Since my book, and not that my book was any type of a groundbreaker, but in the past 5 or 6 or 7 years now, leadership has become very, very popular in the fire service. And there are all sorts of people out there talking about leadership, from Alan Brunicini to people all over the country. You're a perfect example. Look at the Firehouse website. All sorts of folks on there coming up with stories, short stories, and writing books. So my suggestion to anybody who's interested in improving their leadership skills is to keep their eyes and their ears open. Get onto these websites, visit these websites, go to the fire service bookstore. There's a whole host of excellent books out there. And as I tell all the folks that come to my leadership classes, is the great thing about leadership is it's not math or it's not science. And I don't mean to suggest that it's something easy and those are difficult. What I mean is math and science are pretty technical. Math and science, if anybody here has a degree in math and science or practices it or remembers taking it or teaches it, there's formulas, there's specific ways that things have to be done, and 2 + 2 = 4, and that's the end of that. There's no way to get around that. Leadership is not like that. There is no formula for leadership. So a guy in Michigan might do leadership in one way, a guy in New York might do it another way, or two lieutenants in the same company in New York might do it different ways on different shifts. So leadership is a personal skill. It's based on your experiences and your training and all the things that you've gone through in your firehouse career and maybe even your personal life. So to answer your question, again, to round that all up, is there's an awful lot of sources out there in the fire service in print, and on websites that people can visit, and just pull the stuff off the Chinese menu that you like. Someone's not going to apply to you. I tell folks that come to my leadership class, you know what? About 15% of what I'm going to say today is going to be absolutely useless to you. It just doesn't apply to you in your type of fire department or in your company. But the other 60 or 80% that we talk about today is going to be valuable to you, and you might be able to adopt it or take it away and use it in your situation.
Good advice. John, what are some of the skills that you think are essential to being a successful company officer?
When I teach my leadership class, one of the leadership classes I teach, we talk about the eight essential elements of effective leadership, and I the first thing I tell everybody is there's not eight. Hopefully there's 18 or 28. Again, it's a personal thing. Everybody has their own separate list of skills and abilities that they've developed over the years from the folks that they've worked with and from how mom and dad raised them. And you know, I know guys that take the lessons they learned in high school and in grade school from their parents. And that's why they talk with respect on the apparatus law to a young firefighter who might not even quite deserve being talked to nicely, but does because the officer's a well-raised guy. One of the first things we talk about is integrity. How vital integrity is. That's a very important ability. It's a very important way of doing just about everything. And the first question I ask people when I do my integrity section of my leadership class is, you know, why do we need integrity? Do you need integrity to stretch a hose line? The answer is no. Do you need integrity to cut a roof of a burning building? And the answer is no. And I would ask them a few more technical questions, and the answer is always no. No, you don't need integrity to do any of that. Well, then why do we need integrity to be firemen or firefighters? And I wait a few minutes, and eventually somebody comes up with the answer because of where we do our work and because of who we're doing the work for. You know, the folks that we get called to help are either in a medical emergency or a car accident out on the highway or their house is on fire or their kids lost out in the woods, and they're very vulnerable. They're reaching out for help. They're vulnerable. I mean, I've walked through houses that we had a minor fire going in the back, and I've seen wallets, and I've seen gold watches, and I've seen a money clip with hundreds of dollars on a nightstand while we're doing an EMS call. And there was never a thought of myself or anybody I'd ever worked with of taking any money or doing anything that was other than, you know, 100% correct. And the reason people love and respect and trust firefighters and lots of other public servants, but us in particular, is because all the folks that have come before us earned that. It's on their backs that we, you know, are trusted. And we're obligated to continue that. So maintaining a high level of integrity as a boss or a supervisor, anybody really in a leadership role, is very important. Some of the other things I think about is innovation. I love talking about innovation and being an innovative person. Now, I realize some fire tactics and procedures are pretty rigid as far as things that we should do and concepts that we have and where the hose line might go and when you vent and, you know, some of it's scientific and some of it's technical, but there's enough room there that we should all be thinking outside the box. When you pull up to a house fire, there's a lot of options. I use the story of the A-shift coming in with engine 1 and ladder 1 to a little house fire one morning and how they do it. I use a slide in the program and shows an engine in a truck and several firefighters working at a little house fire. And I tell them, 24 hours later, the house next door, which is identical to the house that burned, has a fire in the identical spot that the first house had it, but it's 24 hours later, and it's the B shift of engine 1 and engine 2. You know, would the rigs be parked like this? And the answer is no, they'd be parked differently. Would the two portable ladders be parked, you know, positioned on the front porch like they are with the A shift on? No, they'd probably be positioned a little bit differently because it's a different group of firefighters, a different group of officers that have different skills and abilities, different levels of training, and they're probably going to do it well. They're certainly not going to put the aerial ladder up to the chimney and try and put the hose line down the chimney. That's out of bounds. That's not going to happen. But the stuff that's in bounds, everybody picks and chooses what fits them best. So being a little innovative is, you got to be able to innovate in the fire service. Some people don't have as many people on their rigs as we do in New York City. Some people don't have the selection of tools and the number of apparatus, or even maybe the response time. Maybe you have to suffer through an engine and truck at a house fire for 20 minutes before the second engine gets there, and I suffer for 20 seconds until the second engine gets there. So we obviously need to think outside the box and do things that fit our circumstance rather than some book definition.
Mm-hmm. What else among those elements?
Inspiration is a big one. I talk about inspiration all the time. And how do we inspire people? And I ask that question at every seminar, and every seminar I've been at, I get the same answer, and I get the correct answer. And somebody in the audience says, you know, by example, you know, we inspire people by how we act. And that is a wonderful, wonderful answer, and it's absolutely correct. There are other things that we do, too, but such a big part of inspiration, such a big part of showing your firefighters the way, the proper way to do things, the proper way to dress, the proper way to talk, the proper way to behave, all those acceptable things, they figure out when they get to the firehouse. Now, you know, there's all sorts of people out there in the world, being raised by all sorts of parents from all sorts of different cultures and different cities, and when you join the fire department, suddenly you're in this group of people that there's certain behaviors and there's certain requirements that are expected of you. And if your fire department's operating good, and if the bosses in your fire department, the people in the leadership roles are well trained, they're gonna inspire the folks that work for them, particularly the young firefighters, and break them right in and show them, here's how we do things around here. Here's how we talk to each other. You know, we always come in a little bit early. We always go home a little bit late. You know, the stuff that in the firehouse has to get taken care of gets taken care of before anybody worries about taking care of stuff for themselves. And those are more lessons that company officers or lieutenants or captains or whatever rank you may have, those are the things that they have to instill in young firefighters. I talk a lot about like how people dress and how people look and whether they're shaved, clean shaven, or whether they're well groomed. Those almost sound like old-fashioned ideas to a lot of people, but if you're in the military, or if you're in a police, or if you're in a fire service, those aren't old ideas. Those are very good current ideas. And if you want to display a positive image to the public that we serve and to the other folks that we deal with and to the police officers that are responding to the accident that we're responding to render assistance people to and to the civilians or the public that come to the firehouse door and knock on the door asking a question or making a complaint about something, you know, you gotta look like something. And I tell guys all the time, you'll never see me without an iron shirt on. Anytime I got a shirt on, it's been ironed. Generally by me. I got 5 children, and as we were growing up, there was enough laundry to be done for my wife, so I got in the habit of doing it myself. And I do it for work to this day. I'm a 50-year-old man, and I iron my shirts before I go to work. And it's important to me to look good. Now, I'm not saying that there's not great fire officers in New York City that wouldn't even know how to plug an iron in, because there are. But I think it's a very important lesson to learn that when you look sharp, when you dress sharp, when you're groomed well, when your hair is combed, you just look like something. Just watch a movie. You respect a guy better that's well-dressed and clean-shaven than a guy who's got a 3-day growth of hair and beard. And I think that's very important. That's another important part of inspiration is showing, you know, and telling and explaining to the folks in your fire department what's expected of them and how you want them to act.
Okay. What else?
Yeah. I wrote a couple of things down here. Interest. You know, like, I can't imagine anybody being in the fire service that's not interested in it. But as you and I know, it's true. There are a few people that are disinterested. You know, my experience is generally some people lose interest, maybe later in their career. And I got 30 years in the fire department. I haven't lost any interest at all. I frankly still am looking forward to going to work every time I do. But other people, you know, maybe they get to the end of the road and they figure they're going to leave and they actually retire in their mind 6 months before they stop coming to work. So for the last 6 months, maybe they don't put so much energy into a drill or so much energy into explaining to young guys, you know, what happened at that last call that they were at that they might need to know. And that's unfortunate. But a good officer, a lieutenant or a captain riding the front seat of any fire apparatus in any fire department anywhere, you know, volunteer or paid, and all my comments here speak to both services. There's no differentiation in a fire service between volunteer and paid when it comes to service, when it comes to, you know, performance and what we're supposed to be doing. But a good fire officer who's riding the front seat on a call or on some other type of administrative assignment or whatever it might be, a training event, that's their job. That's their job to stay interested, to know what's going on, to be a professional. And that doesn't just happen by saying it. You know, probably the most important element of staying interested is reading. You know, if you want to be a leader, you got to be a reader, you know. And you should be getting Firehouse Magazine every month. And you should be going to the library or the fire service bookstore and ordering a book every couple of months and doing some reading. Maybe just going and reading the Firehouse Magazines that are around. If your department may even have a little training magazine. And there's all sorts of resources out there. Gosh knows, everybody's got a computer. And if you go online, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of resources and sites that you can go to and start reading. I tell everybody, my article hasn't come out yet in Firehouse Magazine, but I wrote an article about the NIOSH website. Go to the NIOSH website and read the Firefighter Fatality Investigation Reports. They are just full of information on stuff that we should be doing or shouldn't be doing. So you want to be a good leader. You want to stay interested. Well, the only way you can stay interested is by reading and learning. And I can't tell you how many times I've read an article sitting in my backyard or sitting out on the front porch or sitting in my dining room on a 72-hour, you know, swing at home. I'll read an article in Firehouse Magazine about roof cutting or about, you know, operating on highways, safety procedures. And I'll say, wow, this looks pretty interesting. I'll fold a page over and I'll throw that magazine in my bag. And that's the bag that a day and a half from now, I'm going to throw in a front seat of my truck and drive to work with. And when I get there, when I'm taking my stuff up, boop, there's the magazine. And I flip it open and say, oh, there's where I brought that. And I'm making copies of it and sending it out to the companies that night, or maybe running a little drill down in the kitchen before or after dinner on some subject that I read 2.5 days ago in my dining room on my own time. So don't limit your professional development and your training and your interest in your job to the 40 hours a week that you're working at the firehouse, or the 15 to 20 hours a week that you're there volunteering and training. You know, being a firefighter, a professional firefighter, and a leader and a role model is staying interested, you know, 24/7.
John, when you say if you're going to be a leader, you got to be a reader. We had dinner earlier tonight, and in the course of driving to dinner and while we were having dinner, you mentioned 3 or 4 or 5 different books that you've read. You're in the process of reading. You're at an airport. You go into the news magazine shop, and you find a book, and you're picking them up, and it really struck me as how not only well-read that you are, but how broad your perspective is. We had talked about this magazine article that you'd read on the airline about the cellist, and how fascinating you thought that article was. You know, in the mindset of an average firefighter who thinks of John Salka, you know, at FDNY, they probably don't think of a person who would say, boy, I read an article about somebody who plays the cello, and it was really interesting. But what it speaks to is your need to be broad in your look at the world. In other words, the whole world isn't just what's happening in the fire department. In fact, the books you mentioned to me tonight weren't fire department books. They were all books about, you know, different topics that had lessons for the fire service, mm-hmm. but weren't necessarily written by firefighters about firefighters. The lessons are broader. So that you're definitely one who walks the walk and talks the talk on being well-read, and I was impressed with that. We're going to take a break. This is the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Gassaway. We're in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, with FDNY Battalion Chief John Salka, and we're talking about company officer leadership development. We'll be right back.
Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Gassaway. We're in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, with FDNY Battalion Chief John Salka, and we're talking about company officer leadership development. John, you wrote the book, First In, Last Out, and in there you talk about the skills and abilities of a leader. Share with our listeners what some of those skills and abilities of good leadership are.
You know, there's so many, and as I said in the earlier part of this interview about, you know, the 8 that I talk about and a couple of the articles that I've written and some of the programs that I teach out there, there are so many skills and abilities, and they're pretty personal, they're pretty unique, everybody has their own set. You know, it's like that saying where all the important stuff I ever learned in life, I learned in kindergarten. I forget who wrote that or where I read that, but it's so true. It's so true that the skills and abilities, the things that you learned in kindergarten, you know, and about coming in on time, about treating people nicely, about working hard, those are all firehouse values. Those are all firehouse skills and abilities too. And you know, we did learn them in grade school, and I can still remember all my grade school teachers, right from kindergarten all the way up through sixth grade. All of them had a tremendous impact on me because all of them had a great set of values and a bunch of great lessons. And they all lived it, like I talked earlier, how a fire officer, you know, that has a young crew of firefighters, or even an older crew of firefighters, how they have to live and live the example and show and display to the folks that are working for them what's expected of them and how they're expected to talk and act and dress. Well, you know what? I learned all those same lessons in grade school, and that's what I pass on. That's what I tell guys you need to be doing in a firehouse. There's no elitism. You're nobody special when you're the officer. As a matter of fact, when you're the officer, you have a greater responsibility at work than a company officer. You might think, oh, gee, I got it nice now. I got my own company officer, my own bed, and my own little bathroom, and I don't have to sweep up the apparatus floor anymore. And yeah, you know what? There's a few physical things that you're not doing anymore. Some physical labor that you're not expected to perform. But now you've got a whole separate set of responsibilities. Now you're guiding people's careers, and now you're showing them, and you're illustrating by how you act and how you talk what's expected, what the values are, what the and I say that in my leadership program that good leaders, you don't want to force positive values. And values are the things that we value. Values are the things that are worth something, like coming in early and working hard, being truthful and honest to people, which is a little variation of integrity, but it's true. And that's what you got to do. You got to live that good life. You got to stay on a straight and narrow all the time, because I tell guys that join the fire service, and I tell company officers in particular when I do company officer training, that the firefighters are watching you. Everybody is measuring you every day. They're watching how you come in dressed. They're seeing if you were shaved. They're seeing if you know, how you talk to the chief when he calls you on the phone, and how you hang the phone up, and what you say about the chief when you hang the phone up. They see how you treat other people, and they learn. They learn by example and by watching. So everybody's watching the company officer all day long and learning lessons by all the things that he does.
John, you talked about, you know, the role models of your teachers in, you know, third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, and things they learn in kindergarten. And I'm gonna digress for just a moment and ask you, are the new firefighters today different than the new firefighters of 25 years ago?
That is a wonderful question. I'm glad you asked that. Even though. We really hadn't discussed this, you know.
Yeah, this is not one we were prepared for.
No, but this is a great question. I just hope you prepared for my answer. actually, I have to tell you that I really don't know, except for where I work, except for the FDNY. The FDNY is a very special place, not because I work there, and not because it's a busy place, and not because we have a lot of fires and people like us, and certainly not because of 9/11 or any of those other reasons. The FDNY is a great place because it's a fire department that is built on rock-solid traditions that have been going on for a long, long time, that have been passed on by a lot of hard-working, dedicated firefighters. And the question is, are the firefighters that are coming on today, the new firefighters, are they the same, or are they as good, or do they measure up with the firefighters of, let's say, my generation or your generation? And for my fire department, the answer is absolutely. Absolutely, and I'm one of the people that complains about some things. And some of the things I complain about is that there are new young firefighters from this new generation that come into my firehouse and to my battalion, and some of them don't know what a Phillips head screwdriver is, and some of them don't know what a box end wrench is, you know, and some of them have never started a lawnmower, or they don't know the difference between a can of gas and a can of gas mix that has oil in it. They just don't know. And they don't know because society's a little bit different now. And there are some people growing up without dads, and there are some people growing up without a front lawn that they have to know the difference of how to fix a lawnmower. And a lot of people are just sending stuff out to get repaired somewhere here and there. And all these other reasons that explain some of those particular things. However, my firefighters are no different than the firefighters that join your fire department or any other fire department. But what I've noticed in my fire department is they conform. And I don't, you know, I sort of like that word, conform. They conform. And what I mean by conform is when they join my fire department, when they are on duty, in uniform, in my fire department, they are acting just like I was acting when I was a 21 or 22-year-old young firefighter in an engine or a truck company. And they look the same, and they act the same, and their hair is combed the same, and we all talk the same, and their behavior is the same. Because they've been told by the firefighters that they work with, mostly by other firefighters, what's expected of them, to come in early, even earlier than everybody else comes in early because you're the newest guy, and stay a little bit later than everybody else stays in case something else has to get done, and to be the first guy done with dinner and make sure you're in the kitchen banging the pots around, cleaning them while we're still eating dinner, because we want that done by you, and everybody else that's sitting at this table did that 3 years or 5 years or 10 years ago, and to be the first one up in the morning after a cup of coffee to grab a mop and start sweeping up and getting the housework done. And the reason I get this all done is because that's the way we've always done it, and it's been very successful for us. So the senior firefighters break the new firefighters in with the assistance of company officers and the back end of the company officers. And what happens is all these folks conform, and they start becoming just like everybody that was ahead of them. Now, to some people, that may sound pretty boring, but to me and my fire department, that's as valuable as gold, is that everybody is following the same road that we followed. Not that we can't innovate, like I said, maybe do things a little bit differently now and then if we learn things, but going down the same old road, the well-worn road that I went down, is what I like to see and what most senior people in the fire department like to see. Now, what I got to tell you is when these young firefighters are getting dressed after a shift is over, sometimes I'm working a day tour and it's going into a night tour, so I'm staying on duty. So I'm not upstairs getting dressed and driving home myself. But I see the guys that I worked with all day going upstairs, getting relieved by a firefighter who's coming in for a night tour, and they get changed into their street clothes, into their civvies, and they're heading out the back door to where the parking lot is to get in their cars. And some of these guys are dressed like my 22-year-old son, with the ripped jeans, you know, five rips on each knee, and with these shirts on, with these, you know, boy-girl colors or whatever they are, I don't know, with stencils of some very strange-looking creatures, and they have these little Barbie doll backpacks on that I wouldn't wear on the best day of my life. And I'm looking at these guys saying, where did you come from? So when they go out in the world, they turn back into whoever they are. But when they go through the firehouse, when they walk through the firehouse door, they go upstairs and take their clothes off and their little silly Converse sneakers, and they put their black work boots on and their blue pants on, and they turn into FDNY firefighters. And I really don't care what a guy does off duty or where he lives or where his politics are or how far he drives home. Really don't care. But when they come to work, you know what? They all fall in line. So the answer is, yeah, they're as good as they were when I got on or when you got on or when the guys 10 years ahead of me got on. And I'm actually pretty happy about that.
It sounds like they're taught to be, right from the very beginning, that there are expectations, and they have some good role models that help them to develop into the kind of firefighters that you want to have on your department. I'm going to use the role model as the segue here. John, you've been in the fire service for 30 years. Share with the listeners the qualities of the best role model that you can remember that you've ever had.
You know, I've had some great role models, both firefighters and officers. As a young firefighter, I remember being very impressed with and very observant of the senior guys, you know, the firefighters that broke me in. And they were all guys back then. We certainly have females on the fire department now in the FDNY, but everywhere I've ever worked as a firefighter, it was sort of the old days. It was just a bunch of men around. And those senior guys were excellent. There was a couple of people in particular that were the chauffeurs of 11 truck when I was on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. I was a very young man, and I had a year on the job, and I transferred down there to get to a more active unit, and I did. And those guys down there just really showed me the way. I had already been broken into the job for a year on what was expected and what's proper and what's right, but then I started really learning how to be a fireman, you know. And I can say honestly, I learned to be a fireman in 11 truck. It was a great place to be assigned to. Most of the firefighters and most of the officers there were excellent role models. There was a couple of guys there I would have taken out with the trash, but the rest of them were excellent guys. And the ones that I worked with, the folks on my shift that I worked with day in and day out, were just excellent role models. And some of the ways that these people acted that I thought was impressive, and I've tried to emulate them if I could, was nobody really got excited. And I talk about that in some of my classes about the screamers and the people that get excited when they go to fires because they haven't been to many or because whatever reason it might be, how calm and cool and collected most of the guys that I worked with. Again, I was a young man, and most of these people came from the era ahead of me. They had been through the war years in the FDNY, so going to a simple one- or two-room fire with fire out two or three windows wasn't a big deal to them. It was the biggest fire I ever went to, but it was the 9,000th one of them that they'd been to, so it wasn't too big of a deal. Stretch a hose line, and let's get the room vented, and they would talk almost at that same calm, you know, tone of voice that I'm talking with now. So certainly people that were confident and calm and knew what they were doing, you know, and competent. Not only confident in what they were doing, but they were competent. They were well-versed in what was expected of them, and they got the job done all the time. Right off the bat, those three features are very admirable in anybody, in any field of work, but particularly for people that are working in emergency work or working in a fire service, because we really don't know what we're going to face when we go around the corner, going to a report of a fire or a report of smoke in a neighborhood or even a report of a house fire. Often it is something other than what we expect, and these guys just handled every single incident identically. You could predict. And I learned that, and I have tried to the best of my ability, and of course that's all anybody can do is to the best of their ability, and I've tried to model my behavior after that as well. And I have a pretty solid routine. From the moment an alarm comes in, wherever I'm in the firehouse, I am pretty much on the same railroad track all the time. I walk to my vehicle the same way. I put my radio on before I get into the car. I pick up the teleprinter message, which is the paper with the alarm information on it, and I start looking at it. You know, the vehicle goes out the garage door, and I'm the one that closes it. Obviously, my aide drives the vehicle out, and then I get back in the car outside, and I turn the light on. And this whole routine that I do, and I do it the same way all the time. And I've learned some lessons from some of the reading that I've done about, you know, muscle memory and about how people in emergency services benefit from doing things in a pretty rigid way, because that way when you get excited or when things stop it unexpectedly, you're still gonna do A after B and B after C. So certainly those are just a couple of the positive features of some of the great people I've worked with.
Okay, well, I'm guessing along the way, John, you've had the chance to have some bad role models too. What are some of the qualities or things that you remember best about those people who weren't the most stellar role models? For those listening, I guess where I'm going with this is, you know, this is a chance for John to give his advice about if you're out there with the opportunity to be a role model, don't do these things. Go ahead, John.
Well, one of the first things you need to do is to remember how to treat people. You know what? Everybody isn't the sharpest guy in town. Everybody isn't the most skilled fire officer in the world. Everybody doesn't have the most experience under their belt. But everybody who's in an officer position, everybody who's riding the front seat, everybody who sits at the desk up in the company office has to deal with the firefighters. They have to deal with the folks that they're supervising, whether they be firefighters or chauffeur engineers or whatever all the other positions may be. You know what? You have to know how to talk to people, and you have to be able to make the, you know, create a positive work environment. That's not very hard to do. Creating a positive environment is not a very difficult thing to do. Yet I have found some people in my career that it was just absolutely no fun to be with, and some people it was just a chore. You come into work and you hear Lieutenant A, B, or C was working, and you're like, oh, God, what are we going to do today? You know, it was like the whole day was a chore just to be there. I've worked with officers that I wouldn't walk up the stairs. If I heard him coming down the stairs, I wouldn't walk up. I'd turn and go down the hallway and wait till he walked down and then walk up, so I didn't have to encounter him on the stairs, because the guy was such a grouchy, non-friendly, difficult to be around person. That's certainly one. Everybody likes to hang around with somebody that's pleasant to be with. The second thing you can be, I think I mentioned a little bit earlier, is honest. And I know guys that couldn't tell you the truth if you had a $100 bill for them. You know, and I just don't know why that is. So, you know, people that rush to judgment, people that yell and scream, people that have favorites in a firehouse because it's their brother-in-law or somebody that they go fishing with or something of that nature. Certainly we all have favorites. So there are folks that work for me in my company, in my battalion, not that I like better than somebody else, but that I have more admiration for, that I have more respect for, because their work ethic is similar to mine, and the things that I think are valuable, they think are valuable. Doesn't mean I treat them any differently. I just enjoy being with them. When I find out certain captains or lieutenant working on a night shift that I'm working on, I'm thrilled. When I look at my ride list and say, wow, look who's working tonight, I know that those lines are going to be stretched properly, and that the fires are going to be extinguished, and the men are going to be safe because their officers are going to be looking for them. So those are the features that you want to look for, and anything short of that is, you know, from my perspective, unacceptable. It's stuff that you either have to, you know, do right or try and make right. You know, if you realize, gee, maybe I shouldn't have talked to the guys like that, or maybe I shouldn't have been so short with them. Nothing wrong with going down and apologizing and saying, hey, Timmy, come here for a second. You know, calling the M5 right out to the upper floor. I'm sorry for snapping at you before, but, you know, you're driving a little bit fast, and I meant to say something to you, and I'm sorry for snapping. You were driving too fast, but I should have said it in a much nicer way. You know, mm-hmm. So there's no reason we can't get all our messages across about all our situations that we want to handle without talking, you know.
So okay to make a mistake, but fix it.
Absolutely fix it. And we all make mistakes. If you think you're not making mistakes, you're really making mistakes. You know?
yeah. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up, John, because it's getting late, and I know you got an early flight in the morning. And I just want to thank you for the gift of your time to share your experiences and your knowledge on leadership. And I don't know if you want to say anything in closing to the listeners, but here's your chance.
Well,
it's
been my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity to talk. Certainly everybody likes talking. Everybody likes expressing their own views and getting the word out there, and I certainly do. And the important thing about what we've talked about is that the readers and the listeners and the people that are going to be taking this information in, is it's good, valuable information. It's not all right because I said it or because you said it. You know, a lot of this information is just stuff that folks have learned over the years. Certainly I didn't invent any of this. Anything that I've said here this evening is stuff I've learned from other folks that I've worked with. And you know what? And they didn't invent it either. They probably got it from the generation of people that they broke in with. So take some of the information. If any of this stuff sounds good to you, by all means, take it. You can pin it on me. If it doesn't work, and say, well, Slava said to do it. And if it does work, then suddenly you look like a good boy, you know?
Super. The Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Yassaway. Again, thanks to FDNY Battalion Chief John Salka for sitting down and spending a little time with us and sharing his wisdom. You can send your comments to podcasts@firehouse.com. That's podcasts@firehouse.com. We'll see you next time.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.